Gunnish Cheesh for being here with us today. You're listening to Juneau Afternoon. I'm Rhonda McBride. Well, most Alaskans take reality TV shows about our state with a grain of salt. You know, those episodes of homesteaders desperate to kill a moose to put up for winter when we all know that they're not in the wilderness and just up the road from a grocery store. True story of a reality show I once saw, and all the neighbors knew that it wasn't as real as they were trying to make it seem. But producers of Revision Alaska hope to bring television viewers across the state the real deal. And joining us to give us a preview of their new program, two of my colleagues here at KTOO, Paige Sparks and Javier Camacho, as well as Gina Varney, who is the marketing director for KTOO. So we're going to talk about this baby that's been in the making. It's been bulging. It's ready to be born, I'm sure. So Paige, why don't you tell us about, you know, what an epic project this is?
Yes, epic, I think, is the correct
term. Isn't
that
a good word?
That's a good word. It is. It's such an epic. This project has been such a heart project for, I mean, really, we started, what, in March, if you really think about it, when we actually, like, started. And it felt impossible to be able to produce what we have is now 9 episodes, each 30 minutes each, of original documentaries in and around Alaska. It's a heart project. It feels really good to get it out in the world, and I cannot wait for people to send us their feedback and just see it, finally see the epic.
To admire the baby.
Admire the baby, exactly.
So, Javier, I want to ask you about how you came up with the name Revision Alaska. It seems very clever, doesn't it, to kind of revision but have a vision for the state. There are a lot of plays with that word.
Yeah, you know, really came forward. When we were talking, we wanted a name that kind of embodied the values of this program. And one of that is just recognizing the power of stories. And, you know, stories, they create our world, they create us, and they shape the future that we can imagine. And bringing that knowing to this context in Alaska, storytelling was a big part of the colonial project. And that legacy remains imprinted on the stories we tell today. And so what does that mean for us as, you know, a public media organization? It means we need to tell different stories, stop telling some stories. But the good news is these stories are already here. And it's not that these certain stories have been untold or need to be found, because they have been, stewarded by a lot of people in our community. The point of Revision Alaska, it's acknowledging that, you know, if we want to imagine a different future together, then we need to tell different stories. And a story can change the way you look at the world. Wanted to acknowledge that power.
A story can change the way you look at the world. And do we have stories, Paige, that are going to change the way we look at the world?
Oh, yeah. I sure hope so. Just to piggyback off of what Javier was saying, it's absolutely one of those situations where the stories have always been here. They are here. We're not here to create any stories. We're just simply the funnel in which those stories can now be presented to many, many viewers on our channels and on our website.
You know, I almost feel like, from the way that this project has sounded, is it's almost like inviting the state into KTOO's living room.
I love
here
that.
Here in Southeast Alaska,
yes.
To kind of share experiences together.
You know, I've always kind of said when in making documentary films, it's like a well-written letter where if you really want to get something across, the best thing to do is like, hey, I'm going to write this person a letter. And it allows you time to speak, time to get all the points across that you want to get across. And nobody's going to interrupt you in the process. And I think that it always creates really engaging communication after. And so with documentary films, I've always tried to present them in that way, like a very well-written letter from somebody else's voice, right? Again, I'm just the piece of paper, but they're the ones writing the script. So ultimately, I'm really hopeful that the conversations that happen after the fact are the things that are really going to keep going for this series.
So that is an interesting concept, that to think of it as like a letter, a very dear letter that's got a lot of heart and soul into it. But in general, how does this work? I mean, we've had lots of documentaries like reality shows, which I mentioned, and I'm sure this is nothing like that, but what are we going to see when this series rolls out?
Yeah, so it's really funny to me when documentaries get compared to reality TV. I think that's kind of a broad view of how people just like overgeneralize filmmaking. When it comes to reality TV, just like what you were saying in your intro, like they're not real. They're highly produced. It is like
staged.
There's a lot of reproduction that happens. And the reason I know this is because, unfortunately, that was one of my first jobs, was working for a Discovery Channel outlet. And we were doing reality TV, essentially. But it was played off as not reality, right? It was played off as, as a documentary. And I only lasted in that gig for like 9 months because I just decided I'm never going to do this again. So what we're going to see is the exact opposite. We're going to see the things that I learned from that career path that almost took me somewhere different, and actually see what PBS and what public television offers, which is this... It's real. It's people's voices. It's communities. It's heartfelt stories. It's difficult and challenging conversations. And the whole way we are not in there saying, hey, could you actually say this? What if you said it this way? Okay, now walk from the left side of the room to the right side of the room. We don't do any of that. We are flies on the wall. We are there to observe, and we are there to just listen.
Well, sometimes you have to go through experiences like your first one to understand how to not make those mistakes. Or I guess maybe they're not mistakes because that's entertainment.
Exactly. It's a totally different genre. And so now I really make sure to say it's nonfiction filmmaking. I mean, it's not just documentary. This is nonfiction. We are sharing stories that are not fake. So, yeah, absolutely. I really try to make sure that in all the pieces that we craft that you feel like it's real. You don't feel like you're being tricked because that's not the goal.
So, Javier, what's it like? It must be a tremendous sense of responsibility that you have to the people that you're working with.
Yeah, I mean, it is always a tremendous responsibility. You mentioned the idea of inviting people into the KTO living room. I think in many ways these projects are actually people inviting us into their living rooms. And so you just never take that for granted. And the ability to listen to people as they are really doing incredible things in their own lives. It's such a privilege. Such a privilege to stand alongside people as they're doing important work. A lot of the programs that our audience will be able to watch this year, you're going to witness people just doing incredible work, really facing some of the biggest challenges that our state faces when we think about past injustices, when we think about where we want to be as a community going forward, the challenges we face. And people are finding incredible solutions. People are coming together with incredible amount of love and care for one another. And so, yeah, it's always a privilege to, for people to open up their world to us. You know, definitely don't take that for granted.
Well, when the title says revision, we're revisioning, is it how we're looking at things? Maybe it's a different kind of lens maybe than documentaries and other programs typically use?
It's definitely very specific to our Alaskan context. You've brought up with Paige the comparison to reality TV. You know, reality TV tends to uplift the story of a certain kind of Alaskan, right? One that is, homesteading, or one that is often white, making their living from the land. You know, there are these kind of classic tropes. And so what are we revisioning? In many ways, This show kind of has really ambitious mission in that we have to revision a lot of things. It's the way we look at the landscape around us. It's the way we look at members of our community, pieces of history. You know, whether you think that who the indigenous inhabitants of this land are. Do you know their stories? Do you know their names? Do you think that people walked away from their language, or do you know that it was taken? You know, all these things. I think once you start to know these bits of our history, which are still not often widespread in our community, you start to see things very differently. You know, if you know that that a language was attempted to be forcibly taken from a people, maybe that makes you more likely to say "gnoshtish" in a store instead of "thank you." Maybe that makes you look at language revitalization efforts completely differently. yeah, what are we revisioning? I mean, it's a lot. And that's why we're really relying upon our community to help us look at what stories we need to, like we were saying before, revise, stop telling, or what are completely new things that maybe a lot of members of the community don't know yet.
Well, I think you're onto something, Javier, because when you know someone's story completely, that you're more likely to be open to a new way of thinking. And I think maybe that's part of our problem today is we don't know everyone's story?
Well, I think
as many stories as we should know.
Yeah, I mean, I think for a long time, certain stories were privileged above others. You know, like I said, the legacy of colonialism, white supremacy, these privilege certain stories and they diminish the value of others. So, yeah, I mean, this is like kind of go back. This is an ambitious project. We know that this is a mission that we won't be able to accomplish even in our first season or our second season. You know, it's a really aspirational thing that we're hoping to move forward to. And I think that a lot of parts of our community and our country are also trying to take similar steps of saying like, wow, actually, you know, what are the histories that we haven't been talking about publicly? And what are the ones that we need to start telling?
Paige, I almost have to ask this because I wonder, some of these stories are really amazing stories. I mean, it's not just that they need to be told, but they're a treasure trove of stories. What's been your experience in working with this series?
I mean, I think you said it perfectly, right? It is a treasure trove, but that's the whole – that's the joy in nonfiction filmmaking that I always have, which is I think everybody has their own version of an incredible story to tell, right? And it's our jobs to go out and lift those stories up in a way that maybe, well, not even lift them up, honestly. Again, just be the lens that's there in the room to then bring it forward to our platform that we have available to us, which is our privilege as filmmakers and in the station that we work in. The treasure trove for me, it's that human connection aspect. I think that's something that you're going to notice a lot in this series is the connection to people. People are the driving force in our stories. Every story that we're telling is based around people, communities, diversity, and I think that's the thing that's really going to be the leg up in our revision series.
Well, I want to go to Gina Varney, our marketing director, because it's been your job to kind of get the word out that this show is being launched. So when does it start? When should people start tuning in to look for this series?
Every Thursday, starting this Thursday. So Thursday nights, 8 o'clock p.m., that's your plans for the rest of, you know, the next 2 months, 2.5 months, till Thanksgiving. So on
your date.
Yes. Mark your calendars. And if you're like me and don't – and if you need a calendar invite, go to YouTube and sign up for the YouTube premieres. It's going to be everywhere, online, on KTOO 360 TV, our statewide television channel, on our Roku app, on KTOO.org, anywhere. Just Google Revision Alaska and you're going to find it.
So also – we have something for the launch, which is what this Thursday, something special for the community of Juneau. This is really a statewide show, but we're going to throw a party for the community.
Yes.
Here at KTOO.
I'm so excited. We're all excited about this because this is our first like open to the public community watch party since COVID shut the station's doors in 2020. So we're going to have a community public watch party at 7 p.m. this Thursday. I know it starts at 8 p.m. on your TV, airwaves, but 7 p.m. Come in person. Bring a brown bag supper. We'll have light refreshments and just come and hang out with this community of people, the filmmakers. I'll be there as well. And we're going to gather together and watch the first episode called Weaving Our Identity.
So speaking of the first episode, we have some clips to share with people to go through, give them a taste of what to look forward to. So, can you tell us a little bit about the first episode, Paige? Because, I mean, that's probably one of the most important ones because it launches the whole season. So it's got to be spectacular, right?
Yeah, no pressure. So this episode is a partnership with the APK, the museum, and essentially their curator, Ellen Carley, came up to me and said, hey, would you want to come and maybe, like, just check out this project that we're working on, and started telling me more and more about this partnership that they've created with some some weavers in the community and the Portland State University, and then themselves in trying to discover where are the original dye materials used in Chilkat robes. And they have created this incredible science experiment, essentially, of taking just tiny, tiny microfibers off of some of the oldest robes that are, you know, still being shown in different exhibits, while also acknowledging that there's been a lot of past harms done with stealing artifacts and stealing robes and not generating that communication when it comes to doing experiments like this in the past. So this episode really talks about the connection, the connectivity, and the importance of respecting the place that you're in, giving back those items, those materials, those artifacts, those burial goods, and actually redoing how museums and different institutions like science and experimental institutions rework their relationships with Indigenous people and those who were here before us. So that's kind of the basis of this.
So episode one, Weaving Our Identity, and it features Weaver Lily Hope. Let's listen.
Weaving Chilkat blankets is like merging in this universal consciousness, spiritual area of being human. We talk about the Chilkat dancing blanket as a veil between worlds, like the closest we can get to the spirit realm without crossing over.
What was it like to work on that project? Because I always think of these blankets that are woven and all the time and love that goes into them is almost a spiritual, mystical process.
Oh, I mean, just full disclosure, like I was like holding back so many tears as me and Lily were talking about the connection to this, to her weaving and to the importance of what it is that she's actually doing. It's not arts and crafts, right? Like, it's not just weaving a robe. This is, she said it perfectly. Like, there's a reason why she's weaving her identity. She is weaving together her history and sharing that with the world. And then also, you know, bringing up the fact that it's not, everybody's not interested in just sharing it, right? It's something that she's doing for her profession, but not everybody who is a weaver is interested in selling it to museums or making a profit off of it. It is more important than that.
I almost think that you're going to give us an appreciation of things that many in our audience may not have had exposure to or have reason to appreciate.
I mean, again, I don't think I can take any credit for that. I was just there with a camera, and the words of the individuals of whom we interviewed are the ones that are going to share that information with us. I'm just that fly on a wall that's there kind of hitting the record button and then putting it together in a timeline. But ultimately, I can't take credit for any of that education. That's all on them.
So, Javier, you worked on episode two along with Paige and another staffer that we had at KTOO, Lindsay Berlini. She's an Alaska native. But the three of you were together on a language learning group that happened during COVID. And we forget that this project was made more challenging because a lot of the work was done during COVID where your access to people was limited. But Javier, we're going to play a clip from this. You want to set it up for us?
Yeah, sure thing. You know, so this it's a really incredible story. You know, there's a group that was meeting in person before the pandemic. Nancy Barnes, Sugar Up, Alfie Price, and many others. And when COVID happened, they, like many of us, right, they had to adapt and go online. But what they found is that they now have this, you know, community that goes across North America that's connecting Tsimshian people that are living all across the United States, and they're coming together. I mean, not just on a weekly basis, but sometimes even daily, to practice their language, to encourage learners of all levels. And this is just it's a really, really incredible, heartwarming story. And you're going to see what it means to people to connect with their Indigenous language.
Well, especially this language, because with Tlingit, there are decreasing number of speakers. You know, and they're trying to rebuild the number of fluent speakers from the past. But I think that with this language, it's even more fragile.
Yeah, that's correct. You know, I think people probably in Juneau know about Thlinkit. People might not have heard about Somaliach, which is the name of the language spoken by Tsimshian people. So we really wanted to make sure that we were trying to uplift all the languages of Southeast Alaska.
All right, so here's a taste from episode 2.
Lots of influences keep us back from learning and being able to speak our languages, and not just physically speaking with your mouth, but there's a mental and spiritual blockage. When you try to make the unique sounds, we have several unique sounds that don't exist in Kamsuamic and English. And it can be frightening. There are a couple of our learners whose parents or grandparents spoke Somaliach, but then had to stop for whatever reason. My grandmother was one of them. My great-grandmother was fluent and would mainly speak in Somaliach. My grandmother would listen to her and understand and respond in English. But she had gone to a boarding school and one of those who was punished for using the language, so she didn't use it.
When you're doing language reclamation work, you kind of have to learn how our words were taken from us and the ways colonial violence were used against us and exactly how the language became so endangered.
One day before class, I'd mentioned Bob. Bob is older than me. He was my mother's age. He went to elementary school with my mom, and they were class rivals. They were always trying to be the smartest kid in school. And at that time, he had learned some Somaliach from his mother and his aunties. And if they used some Somaliach in the classroom, and this is in Metlakatla, Alaska, they would be punished. And he told me that he had to stand at the blackboard, draw a circle, and then put his nose in it and stand there for the whole class period. And it was humiliating. The teachers were very forceful about making them not, they called it speaking Indian. They didn't want them speaking Indian. And he was telling me these things that happened. And I could really feel the hurt and the pain that he was going through.
Boy, this is very timely to hear this clip because this Friday is Orange Shirt Day, and people will be honoring boarding school survivors, and stories like this are ones that people haven't heard very much about. So, Javier, you did another one on languages, native languages. What is it that draws you to this?
I mean, I don't think it's just me. It's a commitment, you know, here stationwide at K2O to do what we can to support the language revitalization efforts in our community and recognizing that language revitalization is key to anti-racist work and to decolonial work. And so I just think that very early on, we all felt that we wanted to, as much as we can, incorporate language in the pieces that we're doing to highlight the incredible strength of people that are leading these efforts. And like I said, just to make people more aware, people might hear of language revitalization, but maybe you're not super involved with those in the community. And so we wanted just to give people an insight into just the incredible strength that it takes to do this work and hopefully to encourage people as well to support those efforts in the ways that they can.
So you have another episode coming up on languages. You want to tell us about that one?
Yeah, sure. This is also a piece that Paige worked with me on as well. It's called Yauk, Language Sanctuary on the Water. And it follows a lineage of carvers, Coxeen, Herb Shakely, Kuchain, Adam Bowers, and a young key, Wayne Price, as they simultaneously work to awaken the craft of building seafaring dugouts, or yauk, and also tie that in with the language revitalization efforts.
So the boat is a vessel for language revitalization then?
Yeah, both symbolically but also literally, yeah.
So that sounds like that would be a beautiful piece to photograph, document.
Yeah, it was really incredible to spend time with carvers. You know, Paige and I started off with following Coxine and Kuchain as they were working on model dugouts, because if you're going to build a full size, you have to know how to work on small ones. And it's a privilege to see them go from these model dugouts, and as an audience, you also see them work on a larger one in Angoon.
Wow. So set us up for this next clip that we're going to hear.
Paige, you want to set us up? I think Paige actually chose this one.
I mean, it's basically going to be through the words of those who were in the film. You should just play it. It's
okay,
essentially
what
Javier
then
was just saying, but not in our words.
All righty.
Our language is forced to die. I mean, this government did its damnedest just to take that away from us, from my parents, my grandparents, from me, from my kids. You know, now it's like a ripple effect all the way until there's no more speakers. And there's, you know, that knowledge about dugouts too, yauk, it's just not there. Like,
I love that word, yauk. That's a beautiful word.
Yeah, there's a lot of really beautiful words in Tlingit. And if you watch this film, you'll be able to hear Coxine speaking in Tlingit, some really powerful statements.
Well, one of the episodes that's coming up is unfortunately timely on avalanches. I mean, we've just had a mudslide. So can you, Paige, tell us how this documentary came about?
Yeah. So we had the opportunity to kind of reawaken a few of our projects that we had started before we had the revision series fully crafted. And when me and Javier first started, one of our first projects together was working on this avalanche piece with the KTO news team. And we decided it was worth revamping and adding to, because the story just started to change, and there was so much more that was happening than when we first started in 2021. I mean, in just this short time period, we had a viral video go out of a woman saving somebody from driving into a landslide out on North Douglas, and now just what happened this week. I mean, you see Tom Matisse, who is all over our project, yet again, up in the field working and making sure people are safe and assessing these situations. And I remember when we first started this piece, it was when I had just moved to Juneau and I was looking for houses to buy, and it became very, very interesting as I was working on which areas in Juneau are a little bit more prone to danger and then which ones are a little less prone. I'm like, okay, let's map out where I want to end up buying a house. But outside of that, we really wanted to make sure that we were sharing with individuals that there is this history of why downtown Juneau is where it is, and it is from extractive industries. It is from mining and, you know, easily accessible to the water and shipments. But, you know, you go out to Auk Rec, which it was previously Auk Village, and that's where the Thinkit were. That's where the original inhabitants were. And I don't know if you've noticed, or those who live out here notice, like, that is a very beautiful, pretty constantly beautiful place. So we do talk about that juxtaposition as well.
And maybe a little safer from avalanches,
yeah,
and mudslides perhaps. Well, let's listen to an excerpt from Avalanche.
My Aunt Bonnie and Uncle Jerry lived here in 1948 and left in 1968. And it was during their time here that a freak avalanche occurred on the highlands, or above the highlands, that damaged their house.
The 300-year perspective is hard for people to fathom when they've only seen 20 years of history. Oh, that's never happened while I've been here, and I've lived in this house since 1967. You know, and it's like, okay, but it took the roof off your neighbor's house. So they've never seen avalanches of historic proportions. And should they occur, those houses probably won't be there anymore.
You know, I think that facts are much more exciting than fiction. and even very real reality TV, allegedly real. Boy, you know, this has me on edge.
I mean, it really speaks to the uniqueness of this place. And yeah, I mean, it's really incredible, like what you were saying, just like these stories that are here. It's so amazing to see how many we have. And just, I think, again, given the uniqueness of this place, the situations that we live in, just living in Southeast, are numerous. But I mean, across the state, it's very interesting.
All right. We have one more clip to play. And this is focusing on Juno's drag community. So you want to set this up, Paige?
Yeah. So again, this was another one that we thought would really, really fit underneath our revision umbrella. This was one that me and Rasha, a former KTOO staff member, produced back in, oh man, probably last year, but really wanted to make sure that we gave it another boost for this season, since it does exactly what our series hopes to do. So that's this one.
All right, let's give it a listen.
The drag community in Juno now is huge and amazing. We call it the Juno Drag Family, and it's just exploded.
That's my favorite part. I was looking like Uncle Fester for a good minute, and then there's a tipping point where I feel like super beautiful. That's honestly why I do this, is I like feeling pretty.
I was taught to love everybody. And, like, you know, despite the color of their skin, I don't see myself any different than the next person. Because, like, I don't know, racism gets me. And I just want to remind people that, like, if I were to die today and a white person needed my kidney or my liver and we're a matching blood type, it doesn't matter what kind of skin color I had, I saved your f***ing life. And vice versa, you know, like, people are more than their skin. We're all one race. We're a human race.
And, of course, this is another piece that was born out of the time of COVID.
Oh, my gosh. And we got so lucky because it was like this little tiny window where suddenly we could gather again as a group. And I remember me and Rasha were both just like, we need to feature the drag community here and the queer community here and give them that moment, and it just worked out really serendipitously. It was like, okay, COVID is going to give us a quick little breather, and then I think right after we were done filming, we closed up again. So it was just like this moment that we took and ran with, and came with a really great group of stories that we were able to share.
You know, one thing that we should probably mention is some of the other people that were involved in these projects, like Lindsay Berlini for one of the revisions pieces, as well as Rasha McChesney. I mean, how important was it having Rasha there to make this piece happen, to get the access, the intimacy that you achieve in this piece?
Yeah, I mean, this is something that so as part of Revision, we are trying to work across channels, right? And outside of working with different reporters in our newsroom, Claire Strempel also helped with a piece that we produced on addiction in Juno and in Southeast. And I think the talent that we have in the building is tremendous, but also just a matter of expanding the swath of what me and Javier can do. We are two individuals that have our own worldview based on how we grew up and what we experienced, right? So we're only going to be able to tell stories in certain ways. So I think by expanding who we actually bring on board to help in that crafting of the story or help in that finding who to speak with is only going to help broaden and give a more honest perspective of the people that we're talking to and the stories that we're sharing.
Absolutely.
So, closing things out, Javier, what does it feel like to have been a part of this project? Has there been a lot of career growth for you?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, it's been great working with Paige, who has come in with a lot more experience than I have. I mean, to learn from others in this organization, to learn from so many people in our community, it's a privilege to work for a trusted organization like K2OO that also recognizes it has a lot of growing and learning to do and being a part of that process. From like a personal perspective, it feels like, kind of a notable step on like a journey that began, years ago when I first came here. I first came here to fish in 2016, and I had the good fortune that the first morning that I was here, I was sat down in front of a map with Zeus James Crippen, who's a Thlinkit speaker and linguist. And I think for like 3 hours, he was just through this map, was telling me all these stories. And so it's...
What a privilege to hear this.
Yeah, it's
and
a privilege.
Then to share it.
Absolutely. I mean, it is an incredible privilege, I think. So many people that helped us with our films, not just on our side of the camera, but in front of it, that gifted us their trust, and we really hope to repay that and to continue to work with the community.
I'm excited to see it all roll out. Well, I want to let Gina Varney wrap us up. She's our marketing director and has all the information at her fingertips. I hope that we've gotten you excited about this series. So what do people need to do if they want to enjoy this?
Okay. So for people who want to watch Revision Alaska, it's every Thursday on K2O 360 TV, our statewide television channel. But you can find it on Roku. You can find it on 360 TV's YouTube channel. You can find it on Facebook. Basically, whatever platform you prefer to use, we're going to meet you there, and we're going to show it there for you. The Thursdays at 8 p.m. is when they drop, starting this Thursday, September 29th. Join us here at KTOO in Studio 1A for the Community Watch Party. We hope to see all of your faces here and enjoy this episode one with us for Revision Alaska. And if you need a website to find all this information and all the ways to watch, it's ktoo.org/revision.
Okay. And, of course, if you have more questions to ask Paige and Javier, they'll be there to answer them happily. They may even get more story ideas for future episodes.
Oh, yeah. We love that.
All righty. Well, I want to thank all of you for joining us and coming to help celebrate the launch of a new series, Revision Alaska. And we've had here with us Paige Sparks and Javier Camacho, who are the producers of this series, and Gina Varney, who is KTOO's marketing director. Thanks so much.
Gunashish.
Gunashish.
Gunashish.